always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Several elected officials in Connecticut have been the victim of swatting, says CBS's Nicole Skenga.
Police rushed to the scene of Senator Chris Murphy's home, plus Representatives Joe Courtney, Johanna Hayes, Jim Hines, and John Larson. No bombs were found, and all of the state's congressional delegation is safe.
The Department of Homeland Security warns swatting often occurs in clusters, wastes police and first responder resources, and can lead to dangerous altercations. Swatting can lead to felony charges and years-long prison sentences upon conviction. President Biden said today he talked with the Americans released by China after they were held for years.
I spoke with all three of them. You know, one was there only 3 years, but he was for a life sentence.
Colorful floats in balloons and marching bands wound their way through the streets of Philadelphia for the city's 105th Thanksgiving Day parade, the oldest in America.
Happy Thanksgiving!
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay. Travelers are expected to fill Wisconsin roads and airports in record numbers this Thanksgiving holiday, according to AAA Wisconsin officials. Nearly 1.6 million Wisconsinites will leave home this holiday week, an all-time high, as numbers continue to rebound after the COVID-19 pandemic. Nationally, AAA officials expect more than 8 million people to travel, the most since 2019. If turkey makes you tired, there's action on TV. Here's Civic Media's Terry Barr.
A tradition continues with an expanded football schedule this holiday weekend, including games on Black Friday. Football and Thanksgiving have been served up together for more than 140 years, the first featuring college teams, Yale and Princeton. The NFL took over the holiday games in 1920. By the 1930s, Detroit became the regular host to these yearly games. This year, Green Bay hosts the Miami Dolphins at Lambeau Field on Thanksgiving night. So far, the Packers' record during these holiday matchups, 15 wins, 20 losses, and two ties. I'm Terry Barr.
Millions of Americans will spend Thanksgiving with relatives for the first time since the election who may be on the other side of the political divide. Experts have some advice. Emma Nadler is a therapist, speaker, and author of the book, The Unlikely Village of Eden. She suggests that people consider what their overall goal is for the gathering and the relationships and respond accordingly.
When you feel yourself getting angry, frustrated, take a few seconds to consider, how do I honor my purpose here?
The group Braver Angels promotes civil political discussions. Find out where the other person is coming from. Try to not put them on the defensive and look for common ground. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
The Packers host the Dolphins. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers and the Dolphins tonight at Lambeau Field, where temperatures will dip into the mid-20s. That could make starting field position more crucial. Green Bay punter Daniel Whelan has improved on his directional punts. Special teams coordinator Rich Bisaccia.
I think he's started to understand where he is on the field and what he wants to hit. He's gone out there with a conviction of what he wants to do, and he's stayed to task, and he's played pretty well to this point.
College football, Wisconsin plays tomorrow on a rare Black Friday game as they host the Minnesota Gophers. Although the Badgers fired their offensive coordinator, head coach Luke Fickell says they need improvement on defense.
When we've had our lapses, that's where it's been. And that's why I said it might be hard to pinpoint, like it's not some schematic thing. It's a little bit easier once you watch to say, okay, guys, we just got to get back to the basics of what we do and making sure we're leveraging the football, we're tackling, and we're playing more sound. I
mean, that's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Mostly cloudy with a few flurries and spotty snow showers. Only trace amounts are expected to stick and winds begin to whip tonight, bringing a blustery but sunny Friday with high temperatures only reaching the low 20s. Plus, wind chills on top of that will be feeling more like the single digits. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 24 degrees.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Brodzinski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Matt Rothschild is going to be sitting in the big chair to break down all the news with analysis and humor. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hello and welcome to the pilot episode of Community Stories. I'm your host, Melissa Kay. I have the pleasure to begin our new show talking with veterans in our area to share their stories with you. First, you'll hear a story from Mike Pohl, known as Gunner. We were introduced at the Heroes Cafe this summer. We had to meet up again to record the rest of his story, as he left me with quite the cliffhanger. The next interview is with Tim Halverson, and the last is with Daryl Hainlein. Now sit back and enjoy your community stories with me, your host, Melissa Kay, and this first interview with Gunner.
I'm with 7 veteran groups, but I'm with the Fleet Reserve right now.
List off the 7 veterans groups for me, if you would.
I'm with the Disabled American Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Fleet Reserve, the Polish Legion of American Veterans, AMVETS, the Allied Council of Portage County. I think I'm missing one.
I didn't count either.
But I hold on office in almost all of them.
So you do a lot for the veteran community.
Yeah.
So Tom said that you organized the December 7th ceremony.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, December 7th is I'm trying to get the right word. It's a day that definitely needs to be remembered. And it kind of hits home. I've been to Pearl Harbor 3 times. I stood on the Missouri. I was out on the Arizona. A lot of people are still there, and they need to be remembered. And so it's just something that I enjoy doing, setting it up. This year I'll be the keynote speaker. So... I'm looking forward to it.
And what do you think is most important on that day to communicate to, like, our young people who have no concept of war?
It's important that they dig into the history of Pearl Harbor. Japan was fighting for what they believed, and we were ultimately fighting for what we believed in, which was save the world from tyranny. And they need to research it, find out how these men and women sacrificed so much on Pearl Harbor Day to enable us to live free now.
And just because I also need to dig into history as well myself, that was the start of World War II. Correct?
That was our start of World War II.
When we joined.
December 8th, when President Roosevelt gave his infamy speech and Congress voted for our entry into the war. So, yeah, that was our entry into World War II.
You mentioned one of the associations that you're involved with, the Polish.
Polish Legion of American Veterans.
Your name is awfully short to be Polish.
Well, believe it or not, I am a Prussian, which is Poland.
Okay.
I've got a little bit of Prussian in me. Prussia was Poland before World War I. Okay. The Polish Legion of American Veterans started in 1922 by guys that came from the States to go serve in Europe before the United States entered that war. So they went for training in Canada and then served in the Blue Army or the Polish Army over there. My wife's grandfather was one of them, and he was a charter member of the Polish Legion post that I belonged to.
Are there very many members in our area?
In Wisconsin, unfortunately, I'd like to say yes, but that's not true. My post is the biggest one in the state and one of the bigger ones in the country.
I know we have a large Polish community over by, like, Nisida area, don't we?
Right. But we do not, you don't necessarily have to be Polish to join, okay? If you are an honorably discharged veteran, you can join the Polish Legion, okay? So it's a nice, it's an historical group. They're fighting to keep the heritage going. But like with a lot of organizations, it's just the older ones and the younger ones don't seem to want to get involved. And young people, veterans, and people need to get involved. That's what this country leans on, is community involvement. So get involved.
Well, I don't want to stop you from drinking your coffee, so maybe take a little break. And then do you want to share your story of why you joined the military with me?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. We got any rum to put in this? Hey, I'm a sea service. You have the ration of rum is still on the books.
Oh, really?
Yes, ma'am, it is. All right, you want to know why I joined the Coast Guard?
Yeah.
When I was 8 years old, my Cub Pack toured the old Coast Guard station in Milwaukee. From that moment, I wanted to join the Coast Guard.
And that was what year?
Well, I was like 9 years old, so that was 1962-ish. Okay. I always talked about it because what happened is they got a search and rescue call, and they launched the boats off the rails at that time. Instead of having them in the water, they launched them. And I said, man, that's neat. And that's all I talked about, and that's why I joined.
Wow.
And I ended up doing more than 20 years. I was a weapons specialist, gunner's mate. My job was weapons and explosives. But in the Coast Guard, you do a lot of other things. I was a boarding officer. I was a search and rescue coordinator. I was a pollution investigator. I boarded ships for navigation laws and stuff. I did all sorts of things. So it was a rewarding career. I wanted to stay in 30 years, but at that time, if you could not get promoted, you were discharged. And I was in a job and a rating that was very small. I couldn't get promoted, so they kind of forced me out. Otherwise, I would have stayed. But my cousin is in the Coast Guard now. He's also a gunner's mate, followed me, and he's just recently put on E8, or senior chief gunner's mate. So he's gone a lot farther than I did. But everything's different today.
Say, it's a different time.
It's
now.
Different time. So there's more gunner's mates in the fleet, so he was able to get promoted better.
So, is there anyone else in your family in the military before you?
My brother was Air Force. My sister was Army. I had uncles in the Navy. I had uncles in the Army. My uncles that were Army were World War II, all of them. They were my mom's brothers. Let's see. There's a military lineage, but I'm the only Coastie in the family.
Okay.
I tried to talk my son into it, but he said, Dad's ship sank. I said, planes don't crash. He was Air Force.
Oh, okay.
So, no, he joined the Air Force, which is fine.
Hmm.
baseball.
So when you were a Coastie, is that a
Coastie?
Okay. Did you ever come across any pirates?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This was in the Caribbean when pirates would want to take somebody's yacht or something. They weren't doing like the Somali pirates. They just wanted the boat. Yeah, we came, I believe it was once that we came across pirates.
Yeah.
It was a very enjoyable career. I saw stuff a kid from Wisconsin would never see. Wildlife especially. We did a boarding on a fishing boat off New England. We could not get to the fishing boat initially because there was a baby sperm whale calf right next to us.
Oh, my.
And, of course, he was bigger than the boat that we were on.
Oh.
And our boat was 25 feet. And he was a little bigger than that.
And a baby?
And that was a baby.
Wow.
And I told everybody on the boat, do not touch that whale. I mean, I could reach over the side and touch. I said, do not touch that whale. Mom is not far. She's down feeding. She comes up. It's not going to be pretty.
You'd be swimming.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah, I mean, so the stuff we saw, I actually rode over a tidal wave. It was an earthquake in Ecuador. This is when I was on the Pacific. And they came out with the tsunami warning, plain language, a tsunami bearing whatever degrees, anticipated time, the whole nine yards, anticipated height. So the captain turned the ship into that direction. By the time it got to us, we expected, you know, 80, 90 feet. Ship rolled up over about 8 feet, went right back down again. You could see it, though. I mean, you could see the ridge, but it was only like 8 feet tall.
Well, that's a relief.
But I can say I rode a tsunami.
Yes, you can.
You know, I was in the Bering Sea, the Atlantic, Caribbean. I went through the Panama Canal. So I had a great, fabulous career.
So have you seen every continent?
I've been to Europe, all of North America. I've seen South America. If I had stayed a little longer, I would have been to the Orient on one of my ships. So I've seen quite a bit. I saw Africa when we went through the Straits of Gibraltar. So I saw Africa. We didn't go there, but I saw it.
That counts.
And so I've been in the Mediterranean. That was a cadet cruise that we did, training future officers. But it was just a fabulous career. I did not want to leave. I didn't, but I couldn't stay in either. So, I always try to tell kids, what are you going to do tomorrow when you get older? Think of the Coast Guard. You're giving back. You're saving lives. I slept on 35 tons of marijuana for 7 days.
Wow.
Yep.
We're all thankful for the many blessings we've received this past year. Relatives and friends from near and far will descend on our homes to eat the biggest meal of the year, watch football, and then eat some more. And what happens next? Well, we all know what happens next. That's why right now is a great time to get your holding tanks and septic systems pumped out for the holiday season ahead. Call Crockett Septic today at 715-712-3456. Crockett Septic, where our trucks smell like sweet cherry pie because the pumpkin pie is all gone.
Crockett Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks and septics pump right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you too. They'll pump away that stinky nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whip. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their bumper trucks smell just like cherry pie.
Yeehaw!
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome back to Community Stories on WFHR. We're glad you're here for the rest of the story.
I'm Melissa Kay, and I'm here with Mike Pohl, who's known as Gunner. And Gunner, when we left off your story. You left me on quite a cliffhanger there. You were sitting on quite a few tons of marijuana. Can you pick up your story from there?
We seized a motor vessel, Litchfield 1, and which had 35 tons of marijuana on board. It had 11 crew members. They were all arrested. We towed the vessel back to our home port of Newcastle, New Hampshire, and turned it over to DEA. And it took them 12 hours to offload it because they found it booby-trapped.
Oh, my.
And they wouldn't tell me with what. Because of my specialty that I worked on in the service, I suppose. But they never told me, but I surmised it was explosives. Because it took them 12 hours to offload it.
Wow.
So most of the crew was deported back to their home country, Colombia. And the captain and first mate were imprisoned here.
Wow.
So, which is actually better for them to be imprisoned in the States than it is in Colombia.
Probably a little better facilities.
Slightly better facilities. So, but, it was quite the time.
Yeah.
Quite the time.
And so at that point, you were deployed where?
We were in the North Atlantic. We were... Probably, I'd say we were off the Carolinas about 700 miles out when we seized the boat.
Do you have any idea where they were headed?
Maine. Oh. They were headed to Maine. That's where the track line ended. And the vessel was in such a state that the boat was actually sinking while we were on it.
Oh, wow.
We had to keep it dewatered. So at least we would stay safe.
Right.
But that apparently their plan was to offload the drugs, get in the nice brand new, they had a brand new Sears fishing boat on board, like 14-foot aluminum fishing boat, brand new engine. They would get back into that and get into Maine that way, and the ship would sink out at sea.
Wow.
That's what we were able at least to put together.
So what year was this, roughly?
1984.
Okay. So what did you do after that?
Well, after all that, we, of course, I did more patrols on that particular ship. We did some other seizures and some fishing code violations, too. And from there, I transferred to another ship at the Coast Guard Academy, same class of ship I was on, but it was just happened to be stationed at the academy. And there, too, we did a lot of drug boardings, made a bunch of seizures, did a lot of fisheries enforcement, all sorts of things like that, did a lot of search and rescue.
What were the fishery enforcements like? Was that...
We were checking the, we would check U.S. fishermen to make sure they were fishing under the applicable rules and regulations. In other words, their nets couldn't be under 2 by 2 inch squares. That we had gauges for all that. We could measure to make sure they were right. The cod ends, which is the very end that does the actual catching, had to be a specific size net. Yeah, just to make sure that they're fishing within the regulations.
Not catching things they're not supposed to.
Right, kind of. Right. American fishermen could keep a certain amount of lobster that might get caught in a net. Okay. So we would check for what they call buried lobster. What that is it's a female lobster with eggs on it. They look like little blueberries.
Okay.
And sometimes you get a fisherman, he'll try to scrub all of them off. Oh. And there's thousands of them. And you can tell, well, number one, when you flip the lobster over, if it's a female or not. And if you tickle the abdomen area just a little, she'd go nuts. And that means she was one indication that she was scrubbed because it's irritated. Okay. Well, not only that, you can't get all the eggs off, so you move some of the scaling away, and you'd always find one or two eggs. Sorry. That's a violation.
Because you want to keep those lobsters with their eggs in the water, so we have more lobsters.
Right. Right. Although there was one boarding I did, I reached into the lobster tank, and I pulled the lobster out, and my hands never met.
Oh, wow.
This lobster, in my thoughts, this thing was 100 years old. I mean,
man.
The claws had two sets of bands on it, plus two wedges in each claw to prevent the lobster from trying to open the claws. And he was still able to move them a little bit.
So this was like a monster lobster.
This was a huge male lobster.
Oh, man.
Oh, it was gigantic. And the ship yelled, "Bring it back!" No. The fisherman told me, if I remember correctly, that he wasn't going to sell that. He was going to give it to a restaurant.
Oh.
And they could put it on display in a tank.
Oh, okay.
A live tank. So... my knowledge, it never was sold, eaten, or nothing, but that was years ago.
Wow.
But that was the main mission from all the ships I was on. After that ship, I went to St. Louis, Missouri for the rivers. It was the old Coast Guard 2nd District. It covered 22 states. From Pittsburgh to Denver, from Minneapolis to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh.
And I was what they call the district gunner there. I was on Admiral staff. My job was to train and qualify reservists in active duty on weapons and law enforcement and stuff.
Okay.
A lot of the reserves I trained ended up going to the first Gulf War.
Oh.
But... yeah, I traveled between all those states and stuff, and that was my primary mission, was to train. And I tried to volunteer for the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, but they said...
Because you were how old then?
I don't know.
Roughly.
Okay. I'd say I was probably 36.
Okay.
Then. And after... St. Louis, I went to my final ship in Florida. And there, we pretty much all we did was drug enforcement and migrant enforcement. My ship took hundreds back to Haiti. And also, we took the first bunch of Haitians that didn't want to go back from Guantanamo Bay. They were going to... they threatened to riot if they went. But we did it anyway. And I knew the language. And in Haiti, I guess I was considered a giant. So I could get away with giving direction to the migrants.
Yeah.
And believe me, those weren't the first migrants I ever handled. Back in 81, 82 was my first experience with Haitian migrants on board a ship. So, yeah, it was, we were busy. We were busy. On that ship, too, there was the blockade of Haiti at that time. And we had boarded a small island freighter, and we could not check the rest of the ship out. And they were headed into Haiti. And there was an embargo on Haiti. So we couldn't check the rest of the boat out. And so we ended up, he refused to let us see the rest of the boat. And he was headed into Haitian waters. So we actually got permission. We came off of there. We talked to the State Department and went back to board him. But before we did that, we fired at him to... get him to turn around. And then we never could get back on board, but we chased him back into the Bahamas. Now, we couldn't go into the Bahamas, even though we work with the Bahamian Navy Coast Guard. We couldn't go in there and board him. Mm. So the Bahamas did. They took him. And he had a lot of contraband for Haiti in his load.
Hmm.
So, but yeah, we fired at him.
Wow.
And it was just, it's one of our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we were operating under a Coast Guard and Navy regulations at the time.
So then after your time in Florida with the Coast Guard,
I retired from my last ship,
mm-hmm.
July 1st of 96, officially.
Okay.
And I was hired by Portage County Sheriff's Department.
Oh, okay.
I was a jail officer for them for 10 and a half years.
Wow.
And the VA finally found me basically unemployable because of my disabilities from the service.
Hmm.
So I was kind of forced to retire from that.
Okay.
So I've been retired since 2007 from that job.
Hmm.
So.
But now you're involved with a lot of...
I'm involved with a lot of veterans groups.
Mm-hmm.
I command the Polish Legion of American Veterans. I'm a state commander for the Polish Legion of American Veterans, second vice commander. I'm a secretary for the Fleet Reserve Association, advisor to the new VFW at Point, all sorts of different things.
Yeah. Keeps you busy, huh?
It keeps me very busy. And next year will be my last year of emceeing Memorial Day and Veterans Day.
Mm.
So I've done that for 20 plus years. So I'm going to step down next year.
Yeah. Well, and I know we talked before earlier about what you would say to young people who are thinking about joining the military. But again, what would you say to them or for veterans to join these organizations?
Veterans need to join a veterans group. Okay. The biggest reason is it's not what's in it for them.
Hmm.
It's what's in it for us. Your name is on a roster. I don't care if you join one. Don't do like I did and join seven, but join one.
Yeah.
Your name is on a roster. Congress sees those rosters.
Mm.
That's a vote in Congress for our benefits, which we are losing daily.
Mm.
And if a young person is willing to, it wants to join the military, talk to some veteran.
Yeah.
Sure, it's going to be a little different from when they were in to today. But, of course, I'm partial to the Coast Guard.
Makes sense.
You have to be a little smart. And I don't mean it to say that you have to be dumb to join the other ones, but you have to have smarts in you to join the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
All right. My last thing I heard, it's a two and a half year waiting list to get in the Coast Guard.
Wow.
It's very selective.
Mm.
The training you get is great. I mean, you look at what we do. We do a lot more than the other branches.
Mm-hmm.
You have aids to navigation. You have maritime law enforcement, which is drugs or fisheries or treaties,
mm.
you know. You have, I think there's like eight different missions for the Coast Guard.
Wow.
So it's a diverse outfit. I did serve in quite a bit of those diverse things. The only thing I didn't do was put a buoy in the water, but I did everything else. I was a search and rescue coordinator on Lake Michigan. I did the drug boardings, the fisheries boarding. I did oil pollution investigation.
Mm.
Oil spills, chemical spills. I boarded foreign ships to make sure they were following the navigable rules and regulations coming into the Great Lakes.
Mm.
So I did a lot of those different missions, except, like I said, I never put a buoy in the water for navigation. But I had fun, and I encourage people to research all the branches. My son was Air Force. My sister was Army. My brother was Air Force. Mm. My cousin is in the Coast Guard now, and he's a gunner's mate like I was. Mm. So research a branch.
Yeah.
Again, I'm partial to the Coast Guard. It can be very rewarding, especially when you pull somebody out of the water.
Yeah.
So, or you take 35 tons of pot off the street.
Yeah.
So, and I've seen thousands of pounds of other drugs. Mm. So research it, talk to somebody, and take it. Mm. You'll enjoy it.
You have had an amazing life.
I think I have. I think I've been lucky.
Yeah.
I've been lucky. I've been, I was hit twice with bullet fire, washed over the side of a ship, but I've had a life.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us, Mike.
No problem.
Sorry.
My pleasure.
Gunner.
That's all right.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay. All over the country, there will inevitably be political conversation over the Thanksgiving dinner table. And for lots of families, there are people on both sides of the aisle, making it a tense situation. Therapist Emma Nadler said if the conversation takes a turn, take a long pause, maybe pitch in with the dishes or take a walk rather than let things get too contentious.
Anyone can say and do things they regret, and it takes at least 20 minutes of non-activating conversation to get back to your baseline regulation.
Some families may choose to discuss the tone of the holiday ahead of time, trying to set some ground rules. If you enjoy mashed potatoes and green bean casserole this holiday, you're not alone, but a new survey includes some other food surprises. Here's Civic Media's Terry Barr.
A new survey is revealing some interesting things about the food you may be sharing this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. It includes the calories you'll consume. The Harris Poll shows most of you say there's almost always turkey, cranberries, and pumpkin pie. But the survey indicates 65% don't even like some of these holiday dishes, yet you'll eat it because it's tradition. One result which may not be surprising, the average number of calories consumed during your holiday dinner. It's around 4,500. That's about twice the daily calories suggested by any health expert. I'm Terry Barr.
The holiday travel season begins this week, and you can expect roads and airports to be crowded for Thanksgiving. In Wisconsin, a record number of people are expected to fly or drive for Thanksgiving. Good news, though, for areas with road construction. Wisconsin DOT said road work will stop at noon on Wednesday and resume on December 2nd. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, Glickid Weekend's box office haul turned out to be no match for that of Barbenheimer's, but it was still impressive and helped the holiday box office get off to a great start. As expected, Wicked landed in the top spot with a take of $114 million, more than doubling Gladiator 2's haul of $56 million at the gate. Gladiator 2, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, and Pedro Pascal, was never expected to be the top dog, as it was always Oppenheimer to Wicked's Barbie. Wicked slightly exceeded expectations with its box office haul, whereas Gladiator 2 came in just under its expectations. This is becoming a trend in Hollywood where two films coming out at the same time were not necessarily competing against each other, but help each other create a social media phenomenon. Landing in third place in week two of its release was Red One with $13 million. Rounding out the top five were Bonhoeffer, Pastor Spy Assassin, and the resilient Venom, The Last Dance, which came in fifth place with $4 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Melissa Kay, news director for WFHR and WIRI and host of Community Stories. I'm thankful for you, our listeners, and wishing you a wonderful holiday season.
Mostly cloudy with a few flurries and spotty snow showers. Only trace amounts are expected to stick and winds begin to whip tonight, bringing a blustery but sunny Friday with high temperatures only reaching the low 20s. Plus, wind chills on top of that will be feeling more like the single digits. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 24 degrees.
Bringing a house of pain.
That's
outside. Pressure. Down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Friday. The Badgers battle the Gophers for Paul Bunyan's axe. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we get a sneak peek at the Hawktua Girls' new reality show. And I welcome Discover Wisconsin host Andrea Belke and from National Lampoon, Jamie Kaler and Jeff Tully.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Thank you for tuning in. Here's your next community story.
Well, hi, Tim. Thank you for sitting down with me today. Share with me your name and the organizations you're involved with.
Tim Halverson. I'm involved with local VFW club, Home Depot. I work with the National Guard Army here in town, kind of like a community liaison for them to get them involved in stuff in the communities.
Nice. And then you also work with, through Home Depot, helping veterans with home modifications?
Yep. It's called Team Depot. It's a program that's funded by the Home Depot Foundation. They go out and solicit donations from different organizations and stuff like that. And then we find projects to do for veterans in the area that need safety modifications to their home, wheelchair ramps. If they get put in a wheelchair, we'll go build a wheelchair ramp. If they can't get there in time, put an aluminum ramp in, we'll put a wood one in for them.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're going to have other opportunities to talk about that. So let's focus on your story. Okay. Tell me how you got involved in the military and why.
My family is very strong military. Two uncles were in the military. My father was in the National Guard. My oldest brother, he was a career military person, 20-plus years. So I naturally wanted to join the military.
And how old were you?
Actually, I was 16 when my parents signed me over.
Really?
But, yeah, I was 16 when I joined. It was called Delayed Entry Program with DEP. So on weekends, I go up to Junction City and we train with the Army Reserves when they have their drill weekend while still in high school.
Wow. So then what happened after high school?
Pretty much 3 days after I graduated across stage, I was on a plane down El Paso, Texas to go to basic training.
So from there, what did you pick a career path? Did one choose you?
Yep. Actually, I picked my first time in, I picked up a light wheel vehicle mechanic out of Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Went there and did part of my training. I re-injured my knee, so I got out for 3 years and made a choice. I'm going right back in once I got my knee fixed. So next time I went in, recruiter wanted to ask me what I wanted to do, and they had just rolled out the M1 Abrams tanks. It's like, I want to be a tanker.
So you spent time on a tank?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Troop?
Tank platoon is what it's called. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And were you maintenance on that?
I was actually a driver, loader, gunner. I was tank commander at my last duty station. And then when he came back to Fort Riley, Kansas, I got picked up at Brigade Headquarters there. That was my last duty station, was in Fort Riley. Got picked up at Brigade Headquarters to be the S2 Military Intelligence, to be their track driver for them, per se. Driving around out in the field and stuff like that. And then from there, pretty much I re-enlisted for 3 more years, got a year off to go to school, got my paramedic degree, and became a flight medic and paramedic the rest of my life.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So let's go back just a little bit. Tell me what it was like being part of a tank crew.
Oh, it's really great because there's 4 people on it. You got to know the ins and outs of everybody on that tank. I mean, they're your family. I mean, brothers, fathers. I mean, we ate together, slept together. I mean, we slept right on a tank when we were deployed.
Those are pretty tight quarters.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You get creative. How do you want to sleep? There were some times I never came out of the driver's hole for weeks, except to go to the bathroom. That was it. Ate down there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me where you served?
Pretty much I was at El Paso, Texas, Fort Riley, Kansas, Fort Knox, Kentucky, got deployed over to South Korea, and then a few temporary deployments here and there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about your time in South Korea as far as, like, the culture?
That was my best duty station was South Korea because there's no training area over there. You train on the economy. We take the tanks right down the interstates, right downtown. Oh, yeah. That was fun.
So did you get to eat, like, local food?
Yep. Lots of times because once we got out in the field, people really loved us out there. So we'd actually park right in our driveway. And they'd bring us out dinner at night. They'd bring us breakfast. Yep.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. How was the food different there versus what you would get to eat on military rations?
Very simple foods, but very tasteful. I mean, a lot of flavor to them, which is very simple. Rice and meat.
Spicy?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Do you like spicy
food? Oh, I love
food?
Spicy foods.
So that worked out well for you. Yep. What about the rest of your platoon?
Yeah, they did. Yep.
Well, that's good. So then you said you went to school then for...
Paramedic.
Yep. Tell me about that.
It's always been a lifelong dream of mine. My uncle has been involved in the fire department out in Vesper all his life, and he was a first responder. And as a Boy Scout, I loved the first aid part of it. And even before I went to paramedic school, I was a combat lifesaver in the military, so I was able to start IVs, stitch up people. I mean, I got that training, too, in the military. And I wanted to be a paramedic when I got out of the military, so.
So what do you do with that now?
Actually, I'm retired from that now.
Okay.
But I did it for 32 years. I was on, when I came back out of the military, I got hired on over the phone to Higgins Ambulance Service. They used to have the funeral home here in town. Mm-hmm. Worked for them for 15 years. Then I went from Higgins, I went to Nakusa on their ambulance service. And in the meantime, I was the paramedic supervisor up at the new St. Clair's Hospital up in Weston. I opened up there. Did that for 12 years and got out of that. And my hips went bad and I retired from being a paramedic.
Did you find that career in any way similar to the family atmosphere of the military?
Oh, yeah. Yep. The closeness, the camaraderie. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Your partner, you get to know your partner very well because you run with them all the time. Same thing in the ER. You had your certain nurses, paramedics, and we did the same shift all the time. But yeah, it's a team oriented.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed the, I don't want to say lack of volunteering, but I know a lot of fire departments are struggling to get volunteers and with different things like that. Yep. What have you noticed about that?
I've noticed a big drawdown in that. I understand people's time is their time, but you have to be willing to take a hit on that too and also help out in the community. I mean, that's why I do what I do. Mm-hmm. I like to give back.
And do you think that that's an important value that, do you know why that's not, why we're having that drawdown?
I think people are, I blame some of this back to the pandemic when we got locked in. People didn't want to go above and beyond anymore because there's nothing to do. Mm. And it just kind of stuck.
Okay. Do you think that there's something that can prompt people to get more into the need to give back?
No, just the public awareness. That's why I try to get out there as much as I can, too, and promote this volunteering. I mean, I alone, too, I got a off a little subject. I got my own little home business that I do laser engraving. I donate so much to these benefits and stuff like that. And it's like, I want more people to kind of see that and follow suit. It's like, let's help out in the community. Get that awareness back out there. Promote it.
Lead by example.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that volunteering and giving back does a lot for you?
Oh, it does. That's what keeps me going every day.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you don't look old enough to be retired, so it must be doing something real good for you.
Yeah, I'm semi-retired.
So let's talk a little bit about the organizations you're involved with here.
Yep. Local VFW Club, I'm not as active as I want to be because their meetings are at a bad time for me, but I do help them all on the backside. We help them with projects out at the post house out there. We just redid their kitchen a while back. We did a bunch of landscaping for them. I do help them out. I'll go to like their brat fires or they hand out their poppies and stuff like that. Eventually someday when I do slow down, I'll get more involved. I want to get on the honor guard for the funerals and stuff like that once I do slow down a little bit. And then for like National Guard, I try to get these people all like on their drill weekends. If they have available soldiers, I got a project going on. I'll see if I can get a few young soldiers over there to help me with the projects because some of these kids have never handled a power tool in their life. So they always send me the young, inexperienced ones, and they work side by side with us.
Because you're just giving them that life experience and teaching them how to do these things. Mm-hmm. That's really neat.
Yep.
And then there were other ones.
Team Depot course. That one I do, that's through the store. That's all volunteer time for me. The writing the grants, doing the projects, coordinate everything. That's all volunteer time for me. I don't get paid for any of that through the store. And then I try to recruit store associates to help me on the projects, community volunteers, stuff like that, to get them out there too.
Do you have a lot of people turn out to be community volunteers?
Yep.
Do they need to have experience with
power tools?
No
experience at all. I got a good crew from the store. Myself, I've been handyman all my life. John Butler, he was a contractor at one time. I have a local contractor, Wurtz & Company. He helps me out a lot, and he's a general contractor too. So he shows these young people what to do.
So is there any advice that you would want to give to young people who are considering maybe joining the military or looking for opportunities to volunteer in the community? What would you say to them?
Do it. Just do it. If you're entertaining a military career, do it. The best thing that could ever happen to someone, makes you become an adult real quick, and it's well worth it.
With a life experience,
yep.
The travel.
Same thing with the volunteering. Just go out and do it. Once you do it, you get hooked.
Well, is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
No, I appreciate the time. And if you ever want to help on a project, come see me at the store.
All right. How can people find you then? Just come to Home Depot?
Yep, just ask for Tim. Everybody knows me. I work back in doors and windows, but just walk in the store and say, hey, I'm here to see Tim Halverson. They know exactly where I'm at.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Tim.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet you.
You bet. You too.
The Todd Alba Show.
Zomers, are you a Netflix and chill guy?
Do you know what Netflix and chill means?
I thought it just meant watch something on Netflix together.
You say that's what you're going to do, but you're really having them over there for sex.
This is why nobody wants to come to my place anymore. I say, hey, you want to come over and have Netflix and chill? People keep saying, well, no, I don't think so. I'll take it back. And I just thought they were being rude.
I do have Netflix, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Thank you for tuning in. Here's your next community story.
Hello, Daryl. Thank you for sitting down with me today. Please introduce yourself and tell me about the military organizations you're involved in.
My name is Daryl Hainline. I'm the commander of Chapter 55 Disabled American Veterans here in Wisconsin Rapids. I also am a District 2 Executive Committee member, and as well, I'm also involved in the Benefits Protection Team Leader Program.
Okay. When did you join the military?
January 13th, 2003.
Okay.
No, that's when I went to training. So I joined, I entered the delayed enlistment program in October of 2002. I don't remember the exact day.
That's all right. What prompted you to join the military?
A number of things. One, I knew a war was coming, and my grandfather served in the Army Air Corps during World War II. He was a pilot. And I felt it was kind of a family honor thing. There is also the fact that I knew the job I currently had was basically dead end. And I saw that I could get a little bit of education out of that. Unfortunately, that did not pan out for me. But I think the cosmos had other plans for me.
Sometimes that's how that works out. So which branch did you join?
Army.
Army. Any particular reason?
They didn't require swimming.
That's a good answer.
It was the only branch at the time that did not require swimming.
Really?
I don't swim well. Sink.
Okay. Well, you know, it's good to know your strengths. And then where after training, where did you serve?
I didn't actually get off of a TRADOC base.
Okay.
I got injured in training and then was medically discharged as a result of that. So okay. I only served 7 months, 13 days.
Okay. Is that why the schooling didn't pan out the way?
The schooling didn't pan out. I got into the VA after I got out and worked through some stuff. Tried vocational rehabilitation. That fell through. tried a number of other reasons to try and find a path forward until I got involved with DAV.
Okay. Now tell me about DAV.
Disabled American Veterans is a veteran service organization that caters specifically to veterans who were injured while in active duty. Mm-hmm. We have legislative programs. We have a transportation program. We help with veterans to get benefits. It's our service officer program. There's a few other things that we do that I'm drawing a blank on right now.
That's okay. All the more reason for people to contact you if they have more questions.
And if I don't have an answer, I am willing to call people who do have answers, and I know those people. So. Mm-hmm.
And those are good contacts to have. Is this a nationwide organization?
Yes.
And then you serve a portion of Wisconsin, or how does that work?
I serve the southwest corner of the Wisconsin area. I'm also the chapter commander for Wisconsin Rapids as well, which encompasses Wisconsin Rapids, Nakusa, Port Edwards, part of Adams County, and I think a little bit of Babcock and Pittsville area.
Okay.
Part of Pittsville also goes to Marshfield chapter, though, too.
Okay, so tell me a situation that a veteran would find themselves in where they would want to reach out to you, whether it's immediately after service or during or later on.
If they feel they've had some sort of injury while in service and they want to have a claim, or they feel that they're already having a service-connected disability and they want to join the DAV, they can check out DAV.org or they can contact me. That's not a problem, and I can guide them through any of that process as they see fit. I know that there are a lot of veterans, when they get out, they don't know where to go. A lot of us, when we find out about benefits that are available to us, we're informed by other veterans.
And that's a very good resource, but that shouldn't maybe be the only one.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, based on your experience, would you recommend others to join the military?
When I went in, I was actually, when after I got in, I wanted to go career. When I did the order, the structure, it felt right, and I just saw a really good path for me. It felt right. Part of it was the tank.
Tanks are nice.
Well, when you got a big 2500 jet engine in there, I mean, yeah.
They go fast.
Well, a 68-ton full battle rattle can get up to 65 miles an hour. So, yeah, I liked the tank, and I wanted to go full career. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, I have a belief that I was meant to be a part of DAV.
Hmm. Do you feel that you've made connections throughout the veteran organizations that you've been a part of since then that have enriched your life?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And for people who are on the outskirts of these organizations, what would you say to them to try to bring them in?
Give it a try. You have a voice in the chapter. You have a voice in your district. You have a voice in state. If you are a member of DAV, you absolutely have a voice. As the chapter commander, I will always say that I'm the lowest on the totem pole. I represent the interests and the will of the chapter. That's it. No more.
And the camaraderie, the family atmosphere.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
The meetings are fun.
Not always, but I try to introduce a little bit of levity.
You seem like you have a funny bone.
There's quite a few of them. I hit one earlier.
Well, is there anything else that you would want to share with our community about your story?
It's not really about me, though. It's about my brother.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Todd Allball.
Hey, everybody, join us next time for a special edition of the show. We'll look at Black Friday deals and look back at a couple of great interviews of the year. Join us then.
The Todd Allball Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Join our advertising family on WFHR and WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief.